And good morning. You are listening to the Mighty Boo, KBOO Portland, 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. In 1 hour from now, join us for Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints. Does Obama have the right to go to war against ISIS without the consent of Congress? After massive floods in Kashmir, the occupying military fails to take proper actions to save lives and property. Also, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission covers up and then ignores dire warnings that the Diablo Canyon reactor cannot withstand the next major earthquake. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews writer Ben Parzebuck about his new novel, Sherwood Nation, set in a near-future Portland in a state of collapse. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, the guests are artist Bruce Zick, Kevin Fox, co-creator of the Blair Witch Project, and John Shanker, co-founder of the cross-media studio Big Eye Group. They'll talk about Dark Horse Comics' Mandela. That's all coming up this morning. Stick around. Up next, it's Teresa Mitchell hosting an hour-long version of Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. That's coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the release party for the Sexbot's new EP, Songs for Jamil, at Dante's on Sunday, September 14th at 9 p.m. Dante's is a 21 and over venue. The Sexbots are a provocative, experimental, electronic art pop act based in Portland who have a strong performance art component. Again, that's the release party for the Sexbots' new EP, Songs for Jamil, at Dante's, 350 West Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. No to the war. No to the war. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the United States Constitution, sometimes referred to as the War Powers Clause, is pretty simple. It's pretty basic. It doesn't say a lot. It vests in the Congress the power to declare war in the following wording. Get this. The Congress shall have the power to declare war. Now, that isn't hard to understand. The Congress shall have the power. The Congress shall have power to declare war. Grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. Can't you just see pirate ships when you hear that? The Congress shall have power to declare war. By now you've heard that the Obama administration is making war on its own creation, the Islamic State. Here's Al Jazeera's take on it from Tony Karen. President Barack Obama used the broadest of brushstrokes last night to describe his comprehensive strategy to degrade and ultimately destroy the Islamic State insurgency, providing few details and skirting discussion of key dilemmas facing any such plan. The United States will lead a broad coalition, Obama said, but its war plan will not involve American combat troops fighting on foreign soil. So I'm presenting Al Jazeera's take on this because you're getting loads of the domestic media on this, I'm sure, because you darn well better support it, or else. I hate this stuff for so many reasons. One of the reasons I hate it is the prospect of going to my workplace, same as your workplace, I guess, and facing people who are going to be waving the damn flags. Well, anyway, combat. Like, there's something moral about bombing people from the air. You know, well, I'll get started on that in a minute. This is Press Watch. I'm going to be here for an hour this morning, and I'm going to be inviting your calls. And my theme is no to the war. It used to be a word started with F that was used in the 60s that had to do with no to the war. It was put there right on the posters. Look at the archives. Well, anyway, Al Jazeera writes, instead, the campaign would rely on U.S. air power and support for partner forces on the ground. To put the Islamic State to flight, the U.S. would supply intelligence, weapons, and logistics and training, but it would be up to those forces to drive out the IS. It was telling that the example he cited as a model for confronting the IS was the approach, quote, we have successfully pursued in Yemen and Somalia for years, end quote. That comparison underscores a message that ultimately is the operative word in Obama's promise to ultimately destroy the IS. In both Yemen and Somalia, America's enemy remains very much intact and active, and the U.S. approach has thus far succeeded in managing and containing the threat, but not in destroying it. If anything, the challenge of confronting the Islamic State movement in Iraq and Syria is more complex. That's because the IS is a symptom of the current state of play in regional power struggles that have raged with unprecedented intensity over the past decade. It is not their cause. Yet it is on the warning, it is on the warring regional proxy powers that the U.S. must now rely to roll back the IS. Now, departing from this text, I choose Al Jazeera because it's a little different, but I don't actually agree with their analysis. My analysis is that if you seem to remember that the U.S. was supporting various factions versus Assad for years, and that that certainly included the Islamic State, and that these groups are fluid when they're not shooting at each other, and that the U.S. has a habit of doing this sort of thing, think the Mujahideen versus the Soviets, then you'd be right. And my analysis is, of course, that the U.S. has not accidentally... This is not an accident. The U.S. didn't accidentally create the Islamic State. No, this is very much planned. I'll have more on this in a minute. And I'm going to be talking about false flags because this is, after all, September 11th, the 13th annual Excuse for Endless War Day. Heck, I would even agree with Chomsky on that. How about that? Here I am agreeing with Chomsky. An excuse for endless war. That's as far as Chomsky will go. I'll go a lot further because I believe in physics. You know, Isaac Newton, hey, what a guy. I'm down with Isaac Newton. You want to diss Isaac Newton? I'm on the other side. Time is 9:08. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Returning to the article by Tony Caron in Al Jazeera, the insurgency's impressive recent success is due only in small part to IS itself, wrote International Crisis Group analyst Peter Harling last week. The way has been paid for it by its enemies, who make an impressive roll call of major players in the region, he added. How's that for almost saying it? The IS, or should I say U.S., thrives as a result of the alienation of Sunni citizens by Syrian and Iraqi regimes and the breakdown of the central state in both countries. The Islamic State has taken advantage of the enduring hostility to U.S. intervention in the region and also of Washington's subsequent retreat and passivity. It trades off Iran's sectarian support for allied Shia militias, Gulf Arab support for equally sectarian Sunni militias, and Turkish hostility to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, which translates into an open border for thousands of international volunteers to cross and join the IS. The gradual collapse of the nation-state itself in Syria and Iraq has allowed the IS to break away from the transnational conspiracy strategy of its al-Qaeda precursor to raise its black flag in a growing power vacuum that covers huge swaths of territory. Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda never had a capital city or revenue streams based on fixed assets. IS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi has, what a made-up name, by the way, has set up his caliphate in the Syrian town of Raqqa and funds his operations in part through black market sales of oil pumped from fields under its control. And I just wanted to part from the text right there. Do you really, really think that the U.S. isn't involved? Well, this is just so convenient. Oh, there's a fire sale on oil. Oh, darn. Gosh, what will we do? I ask you to remember that the original name for the operation versus Iraq was Operation Iraqi Liberation, OIL. Snark, snark, snark. Returning to the article, Al-Qaeda was a selective elite organization that foreign intelligence agencies found difficult to penetrate. The IS has reportedly recruited more than 12,000 foreign volunteers, and finding their way to the organization involves a relatively simple journey from Turkey. The Islamic State is a more visible target, for better and worse. While its posture makes striking the IS easier for the U.S. and its allies, that posture is a reminder of the power vacuum created by the region's multiple ongoing civil wars and proxy conflicts. Once again, depart from that text from Al Jazeera, which I may return to in a minute, to say that both the success, the tactics, and the shall we say, the obviousness of the IS ploy, the USIS ploy, is their pickup trucks. They can roar all over the place with their pickup trucks. They go zooming down the road. They're new pickup trucks. They all look the same. They're Toyotas, if I remember correctly. You know, what a truck, right? And that's also the reason they could be easily slaughtered. Like, you can't travel down a road in the 21st century in easily visible convoys without being blown to hell by the U.S. if they want to. So all this business, I mean, sure, we now are going to have some bombing going on, and it's going to kill people, and it's going to kill a lot of people that the U.S. will be saying, oh, whoops, oh, darn, you know, that happens in war. You know, the U.S., the usual USMO. And people in Syria are terrified to hear that the jets are coming. And I'm sure people in Iraq are just too used to it, be terrified by this point. And, well, it's just business as usual. And it's not credible that the IS can continue in its way and that, oh, it's just a terrible struggle and, you know, the worst thing that's come down the pike since the Nazis and all this business. Well, I want to turn to, as I was saying, the theme for today's program is No to War. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And I have some headlines that I'd like to pass on. Starting with Radio Havana, Cuba, an official European Union delegation that visited the besieged Gaza Strip after the recent Israeli onslaught on the blockaded area, says Israel has committed genocide against defenseless Palestinians. The delegation, which includes 13 members of the European Parliament, has called on the EU to break diplomatic ties with Israel and implement sanctions against the Tel Aviv regime because of the war crimes it has committed against the Palestinian people. Martina Anderson, an Irish member of the European Parliament, told Press TV, quote, I don't think it is too strong a word, meaning genocide, when you think of how genocide is described. It's described as the partial or the whole destruction of people. And what we are seeing happen in Gaza and Palestine is the destruction of Palestinians. End quote. The delegation, which has just returned to the Belgian capital, Brussels, from Middle East, has also accused the West of turning a blind eye to Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and John is on the air.
Morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Thank you for the program, and thank you for all of your work over the years.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. So I know you know all about the history of the area, but I think one of the things we always need to keep in mind is that World War One happened, and the Ottoman Empire broke up, and the promises that were made to the indigenous population where the Islamic State is now operating have been lied to over and over and over again. It doesn't surprise me that when people are face such dire circumstances over and over again that the response becomes more extreme as an attempt to overcome outside forces. So while I myself, I can't say exactly what's happening on the ground there, the thing that I do know is that we have lied to those people over and over and over again. They've been promised democracy, and that's a shell game that never happens. I mean, we could look at Egypt where, you know, with the Arab Spring, we came out supporting democracy in Egypt.
Democracy. I mean, apparently right. The word means torturing people en masse.
I know. And I think the part of the problem that we have on, you know, our side of this argument is that when people hear the word democracy, it has almost, unless you're going to deconstruct what is actually occurring, you'll think, okay, well, we're going to support what should be supported. But you always have to dig a little bit deeper. And you were talking about Chomsky earlier, and he points this out as, you know, when a regime is falling that's repressive, that we've supported for years and years, as we did with Mubarak in Egypt, all of a sudden we start babbling about democracy and how we're going to support the people that are yearning for democracy. And what we do then is to install somebody who, or support somebody who won't be democratic. And that's the reality of the situation that those folks face. So you've got the new Egyptian leader who is completely anti-democratic, and we verified the election and supported the results. So all that happened was that the army came back into power. And that's the reality of the situation. And I think that people need to listen to KBOO. I know that, you know, Pledge Drive is coming up, and this is, how about a pre-pitch for Pledge Drive? Where are you going to learn about this kind of thing, except with places like KBOO, with listening to programs such as yours, where you do get a bit deeper, and you do get to hear about the news that you're not supposed to know? And so when you've got Hillary Clinton babbling about democracy, you go a little bit deeper, and you realize it really is all about the natural resources and control.
And it's very, very difficult to think morally or logically when the weight of the society is against you. And the leaders know this. And I think that's a big function that KBOO has. It's not just having information. It's the feeling of hearing a voice that's actually on your side and against war.
Absolutely. And I mean, what you make me think about is Freud's nephew, Bernays, who was the one who introduced the techniques for manipulating the mass media. So, and one of the things that they did in doing the investigation into human behavior is social pressure is such an effective thing. And I myself actually went through this in high school. They did the Bernays experiment where we got to watch it, where you were presented with cards with lines on it. And the last person in line was the person being experimented upon because they were the ones under social pressure. People would misreport which line was longest, and the last person in line would falsify their own senses and go with the crowd. And so, like, when I hear you talk about 9/11, I think what you're basically saying is that what we've been presented with is the Bernays experiment on a national level, which is you can look at the buildings, and I remember looking at the buildings originally, and you could see squibs coming out. And
oh, sure, they're being detonated. That's clear.
Right. It took me a couple of years of, like, doing research and watching stuff and telling myself to trust my own senses.
Because there is, and actually, if I have time, I want to get into this. There is a mechanism whereby the mind shuts itself down because it perceives an existential threat. And this is actually, there's a really good evolutionary logic to this, an existential threat from dissent. You have to be with the group. We are group animals.
Yeah.
And if we're thinking something that's perfectly true and it's going against everyone else, your mind's going to shut itself down before you can even think through the phrase. That's automatic. And it's rare that people can go the other way. So how do we
counter that? Because, I mean, honestly, I think that if you just...
Very carefully, and by dealing with the fact that we are raising a fear. When we come up with dissent, I think that ultimately, in order to bring anyone on our side, we have to say, okay, this is bringing up a fear in you, and it's not be snarky about it, really. Now, even though I'm often snarky about it, but I mean, ultimately, to change someone's mind and get someone on your side with this, you have to be able to define the fear. It's like, okay, I'm saying something that is really going to cause trouble, but we can go there together. And it's
right. The
solidarity that's going to do it.
Right. And I agree with you. I actually think that learning how to respectfully listen to people whom we disagree with entirely is an extraordinarily important ability. But without which, you know, there's no possibility of crossing the divide unless the other person's humanity is actually recognized. And that's the kind of thing that at this moment in time in our society is just simply not happening. What we're being trained to do is that if I disagree with you and you start to say something that disagrees with my viewpoint, what I need to do in order to protect myself is to destroy your viewpoint before it's even stated.
That's it, exactly. You know, actually, I think since you brought that up, and I thank you for that, I think I'll just go directly into that. I have some information from Francis Schur, MALPC from AE911truth.org, and I'm going to read a little bit of that right now, and I thank you very much for your call. Number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187. And before I go to the next person, let me just lay some of this on you. Studies suggest that some people have a brain structure that makes it difficult for them to tolerate ambiguity, conflict, or new ideas that contradict their worldviews. That's usually those who identify as conservatives, while other people find it easier to accept new social, scientific, or religious ideas, usually those who identify as liberals. Now, I was saying this is from AE911truth.org, the Architects and Engineers for 911 Truth. .org website for the day, and she writes, Frances Schur writes further that an analysis of who dissents in New York City against the official line on 9/11, 38% describe themselves as very conservative. She writes more on that, and you can find the article at ae911truth.org, but I want to skip ahead on that. And she writes in his article, Why Bad Beliefs Don't Die, psychologist Gregory W. Lester argues that survival is the primary function of the brain, and this takes priority over all the brain's other functions. I mean, think about it. That makes sense, doesn't it? First, you got to live. Beliefs are maps of reality. She writes that help us negotiate our world in the absence of sensory data. In fact, beliefs are designed to operate independently of sensory data. The whole survival value of beliefs, Lester says, is based on their ability to persist in the face of contradictory evidence. Now, think about this. I'm speaking for myself. Think about this when you look at those buildings being detonated. You don't want to hear detonated. I mean, most of you probably listening to me on purpose right now, you're with me. But there is a very strong desire to believe the official story for this. And, well, let me just return to the article. For example, she writes, when you park your car in the garage and go inside your house, you maintain the belief that your car is safe in the garage, even though you cannot still see the car. You do not need to go and check on it every 5 minutes. That's a clear survival advantage, as you can spend your time doing other things, such as eating your dinner. That's a simple example, she writes, but according to Lester, the dynamic of the brain applies in the same way to paradigm shifts of beliefs. Thus, it was normal for people to adopt a mindset or map accepting the official version of what happened on 9/11 when our authorities told us that 19 Muslims attacked us because they hate our freedoms, and when the media did not report or bother to investigate any contradictory evidence. Our brains have a tendency to accept facts, and put that in quotation marks, conveyed by authorities. These facts, in turn, become our beliefs about reality. In the case of 9/11, the official story becomes our sacred myth that explains why there is an unending global war on terror and why we must give up our liberties to be safe. And once again, speaking for myself, the whole idea, give up liberties to be safe. Think about that. If we then receive information that contradicts this worldview, the brain's reaction is fear. Feeling that survival is at stake, it is predictable that many of us will become defensive and hostile when skeptics challenge our beliefs with contradictory facts, even simple ones. As this researcher Lester has stated, beliefs do not occur individually or in a vacuum. They are related to one another in a tightly interlocking system that creates the brain's fundamental view of the nature of the world. It is this system that the brain relies on in order to experience consistency, control, cohesion, and safety in the world. It must maintain this system intact in order to feel that survival is being successfully accomplished. Trying to change any belief, no matter how small or silly it may seem, can produce ripple effects through the entire system and ultimately threaten the brain's experience of survival. That's how tough it is. It's not a little thing to ask people to look at those raw videos and see that detonation happening. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. And John is on the air.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Okay, we're talking about anniversaries. 1914, 2014, 100th anniversary, right? We're at 911. Well, this year was the 50th anniversary of Gulf of Tonkin.
Oh, yes, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, so it seems like there's a little pattern going on here. There's this book out called The Fourth Turning. These people who wrote it, by mistake, they were searching for something else, and they were finding out about every 80 to 88 years, whole societies turn upside down. This is, they're just talking about Western society.
Okay, let me just lay it on you. I don't want to talk about that. That is too far too.
Oh, I know. I understand.
I want to talk about stopping the war.
This anniversary, it's just kind of the, it's kind of poetic that, you know, things are pop up, you know, every 100 years, 50 years.
Maybe. Okay.
But, that's about all the comment I had.
Okay. I'm sorry to snap, but it's
yeah,
like, I want to focus on stopping
that.
This war right now.
I was just kind of just making a little connection that some people have written books about anniversaries.
Right on. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Let's stop this war. What do you say, Todd? Okay. We'll go to the next caller and just...
Hello?
You still there, Todd?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Todd. What's up?
Sorry, it's Ty. I didn't know you were talking to me.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Yeah, at the time, 9/11 originally happened, I worked at a rock yard. Demolition was a fairly common thing, and I ran a blast drill. So I'd drill a whole bunch of holes, and the explosive guys would come in. They'd pack them with either Amphil or dynamite, depending on the weather. And we'd all... you know, leave the general area and go way, way off and then watch these guys blow it up. And when that happened, I had an opportunity to talk to a couple of the gentlemen, and they explained to me pretty clearly that it was absolutely the scariest thing, because those guys had been in the business 30, 40 years, some of them 7 years, some of them 12 years. And the older guys wouldn't even talk about it. The young guy would just basically say, the older guys would just walk away whenever anybody would talk about it, just say, controlled demolition, and walk away. Wouldn't even say another word, every one of them. And the younger kid was saying that he was talking about leaving the country just because it was a controlled demolition, pure and simple. Talked about how long it would take to wire a building up like that, unless it was already pre-wired or it was a paint on or something like that. So it's super scary, and by guys that are so many years in the business, it's irrefutable to even hear from them. This is a controlled demolition.
It's shocking. I imagine for them, it's shocking for them to see something that they, you know, because of their experience, they know exactly what it is. And then, unsaid thing was about 9/11 was, I mean, the thing that was said very loudly, but not said at all, was believe this now or you're on the other side. And because there was so much media and there was so much repetition, it was like, believe this now, or you, and they convinced us, you were a tiny minority of dissenters. You were nothing. You were out.
Right.
That's what works.
As well, hey, I wanted to say one of the things. I went to school for architecture, so the A&E for Truth is one of the sites that I've been touting to people for a long time. But for the people that are non-believers, that don't really want to look at this stuff, that want to act like buildings just fall down, then there's another site you can look at. It was a C-SPAN Scholar Symposium put on by Alex Jones, and it is basically five of the most well-respected, well-known experts in their field discussing the pure facts of what happened on 9/11, who was able and capable to look at it. It's Alex Jones for Truth on C-SPAN, Alex Jones Scholar Symposium, and it's really good, 9/11 Scholar Symposium.
You know, Alex Jones says a lot of things that are perfectly true, and he's also a fat-headed demagogue that I just can't stand to listen to. I mean,
yeah,
both things are true.
And,
it's like,
know,
he says
I
a lot of things are true.
I kind of agree with you on it a little bit. He's a kind of a loud, boisterous guy that he's not really, but the thing that's good about it is he introduces people and sits down, and then you have real people talking.
Right.
And so it's really quite interesting, and for anybody who's willing to look at the A&E, you should definitely look at that as well, because you're not going to listen to Alex Jones much. You're just
gonna listen to that's true. Okay, thanks for that. Thanks for calling.
Hey, no,
and let me just repeat that website, ae911.org. ae911truth.org. That stands for Architects and Engineers for 911truth.org. Now, I was saying that trying to change any belief ultimately threatens the brain's experience of survival. She writes, we can apply this statement to efforts to educate people about any subject that contradicts a worldview, but applies especially to 9/11 due to the dire implications this contradictory evidence suggests. And speaking for myself, I was just talking about that. And the dire the dire implication really is that you're out. You're on the outside. You're one of those people. That's the scare. And returning to the text, to open the mind to even one bit of seemingly inconsequential information, such as San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown having received a warning 8 hours in advance not to fly to New York on September 11th, 2001, can ripple through the entire system of belief about what happened on that fateful day, threatening one's sense of control and cohesion. How then can truth advocates become more effective, you want to know, in helping others receive contrary information about what really happened on 9/11? Lester offers several helpful suggestions, she writes, for how to challenge worldviews, including the following. Skeptics must learn to always discuss not just the specific topic addressed by the data, but the implications that changing the related beliefs will have for the fundamental worldview and belief system of the affected individuals. Remember what I was saying? And I'm moving away from what's written down here. Remember what I was saying, that you got to say, okay, this is going to put you on the outs, but I'm with you. Stick with me on this. I mean, if you're not going to, I mean, the reason the truth threatens is because it puts you on the outs. And so you've got to be there. And I want to say that, you know, hello, I'm here. And I've tried to be consistent about this. And there are many, many people who are with you. That maybe that's the other thing. It's like, don't believe the fact. the fact. Let me put that in quotation marks. Don't believe the idea that people who question the official version of 9/11 are a tiny minority. No, not tiny. I'm not even sure if it's